Welcome to Not Your Boyfriend's Sports Show. I'm your host, Maeve, and this week I'm joined by sports photographer Maddie Meyer. In her relatively young career, Maddie regularly covers all the hometown Boston teams. Plus, she's worked on the Women's World Cup, Super Bowl, NBA Finals, and so much more. We discuss the stories behind her favorite shots, her frighteningly healthy perspective on when you miss one, and all the advice she's received and passes on, especially to other up-and-coming women in photography. But first, this week in sports, we honor a true and original fierce lady. Pat Summitt, the legendary coach of the University of Tennessee Lady Volunteers, died earlier this week. She was the winningest coach in college basketball history, men's or women's, with 1,098 wins, including 8 national titles across 38 seasons. She was named SEC Coach of the Year 8 times, along with NCAA Coach of the Year 7 times. She was co-captain of the inaugural women's basketball U.S. Olympic team, earning a silver medal in 1974, and she would return in 1984 as head coach and win the gold. In 2012, she was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. She was named the Lady Vols head coach when she was just 22 and paid only $250 a month. For the next 4 decades, she built the women's game into a sport that demanded attention. And don't worry, she got a pay raise. $1.25 million to be exact. Her real legacy, however, lies with all of the women that she molded into exceptional players and people. 17 of her former players and assistant coaches went on to become head coaches. And in true fierce lady fashion, when asked once by Tennessee officials if she would coach the men's team, she replied, "Why is that considered a step up?" Here's to you, Pat, a real fierce lady. And when we come back, it's a conversation with Maddie Meyer. All right, welcome back to the show. I am joined now by Maddie Meyer. She is a sports photographer for Getty Images based out of Boston. Maddie regularly covers sports in and around New England, especially the Patriots and the Red Sox. Maddie's work has also brought her to last year's Women's World Cup. She's covered the Super Bowl, the U.S. Open, the Kentucky Derby, NBA and NBA playoffs, among many, many other notable events. And this summer, she'll travel to Rio to cover the Olympics. So quite the schedule. You're definitely keeping busy.
Yes, definitely. Thank you for having me on.
Well, you beat me to it. Thank you so much for joining me.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So I'd like to start us off by talking about how you got your start. You credit your early interest in photography to Doug Mills, who is a staff photographer at the New York Times. So tell us a little bit about how you got serious about sports photography and especially the role that mentors have played.
Sure. Yeah. I played sports growing up. I played soccer, and I grew up outside of Washington, D.C. in Virginia, which is a really kind of soccer-heavy area. And I remember I was 8 years old. It was my first travel tournament down in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And Doug used to shoot our games because I played soccer with his daughter. And I just remember thinking, I saw this guy in the corner, and I don't know if you've seen big telephoto lenses for sports. It looked like a telescope to me. I was just like, what the heck is that? So I went over to him after the game with his daughter Ellie and some of the other girls, and he showed me how it worked. And I just remember thinking, like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my whole life. And it's great. He's one of the kindest people. If you ask anybody in the industry, they have great things to say about Doug, and I'm like the biggest fan. He always he looked at my terrible pictures I took starting in middle school, you know, just everything, and let me shadow him to work in the White House and Capitol Hill. And really has been somebody great to go to with stuff like, hey, can you look at these pictures from a baseball game, or logistical issues, you know, hey, I'm having this conflict with someone at a venue, or I'm not sure how to approach this situation. And he's somebody who's been really great to bounce ideas off of, for sure. I know I wouldn't be where I am today without him, for sure.
Yeah, I think it's especially interesting that you said, you know, you turned to Doug not only for kind of advice on images and photos, but also just kind of workplace scenarios that you're not quite sure how to approach.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, I think that again, you see this in many professions, but I think for photography, people are pretty territorial of their teams or their cities or things like that. And so, yeah. You know, I've come into situations where I know most people are pretty nice, but if I have a hard time, I'll say, hey, Doug, do you know this person? Or how would you approach, you know, going to a new city for something like you mentioned before, like an NBA playoff game? You know, yeah. I don't know the teams. I don't know the venue. Can you give me some advice? Do you know anybody there? And that applies to my Getty coworkers as well. We're always helping each other out, saying, you know, hey, make sure you talk to this person. They're great. Or, you know, make sure you get there. You go through this entrance. Any little kind of tip, we always try to help each other out.
Definitely. All right, so I'm assuming that some stuff happened between introducing yourself to Doug Mills as a kid and now actually doing this for a profession. So fill in the gap a little bit. How did you get more serious about photography?
Sure. You know, it was something that kind of stuck in my head. I've always been a bit of a stubborn person, and I just thought, you know, again, a little bit naive in my thoughts of it. I thought, you know, if he can do it, I can do it for sure, right? So I started shooting, like, you know, many of my coworkers did, for my high school newspaper, my high school yearbook. As soon as I was able to drive, I started taking assignments for my local, just kind of weekly newspaper. And then I went to Ohio University, which has a photojournalism program, which was really challenging, and I learned a lot there, and did as many internships as I could. I did some work on Capitol Hill doing some political stuff, which was really great. And then working newspaper, kind of general assignment stuff. But the biggest thing was definitely my internship for Getty in New York. Mm-hmm. And once I got there, I don't know, I think that most people have these experiences where you meet someone or do something and you think, this is what I want. And that's how I felt when I was at Getty during my internship. I just knew. I said, I don't know if it's possible to get a job here, but I'm going to work my ass off and see if there's a way I can make it happen, you know? You know, the stars really aligned for me that not only did I get a job, which, you know, it sounds so cheesy, but I really am thankful for it every day. But also it's in Boston, which is, you're from there, you know, it's a...
Yeah.
Not only a great city to live in, I love it, but the sports market is unbelievable. You know, the fans are insane. The teams are always, even if they're not good, people care about the Boston teams, which is really cool. you know, and the sports talk radio there is unreal. That's my favorite thing, listening to the radio on my way into work. You know, it's great.
Oh, well, I definitely want to get into Boston sports in a bit.
Sure.
So no worries there. Well, obviously, I can't pass up an opportunity.
Of course.
You know, I think that being a sports photographer is interesting because it's obviously content and material that people see every day and interact with every day, but they might not necessarily know what goes on behind the scenes to make that image.
Totally.
So tell us about a typical work day or maybe what you did yesterday. How does an image get from your camera to our screens?
Sure. Well, a good example I can walk you through is, let me get the date right. The last assignment I did was a Red Sox game. So Thursday's game was really interesting. Day game started about 1:30. So for that, I got there. I normally get there about 2.5 hours early for a regular season game. Football, I get there a little earlier just because there's a bit more that goes into it. But I get there early. I set up next to the first base dugout. If you watch on TV, you'll see at any of the stadiums, there's a spot for the photographers. So I get my computer set up, make sure my cameras are charged, put them all together, kind of decide what lenses I want to use depending on the teams that are playing and the light.
Huh.
Working for Getty, being a wire service, we're really kind of on deadline constantly. So again, the teams that are playing and the time it starts are a real factor. If it's a 7 o'clock game with two East Coast teams, that's really, I'm working to get as much out before 8:30, 9 o'clock as I can for the newspapers.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's a day game and they're playing Chicago or they're playing a West Coast team, I've got a little more time where I can kind of walk around and get away from my computer a little bit more. But it's definitely always in the back of my mind thinking, okay, who needs these pictures? What's important to them? What is the storyline of this game? And that's kind of what I think about. If I find myself spacing out, the way I kind of key myself back in is thinking, okay, if I were to call one of my friends or my mom or something like that, what would I tell her about this game? Why is this special? And sometimes the thing that's special is that it's boring and it's taking forever. Or, you know, or, oh my God, the thing that really, one of the things that made me think, or maybe inspire is not the right word, but the New York Times a few years back did a gallery of empty stadiums. Huh. You know, it was something larger about the MLB saying, hey, the MLB is having a hard time filling these stadiums in the middle of the season. And, you know, luckily that's not so much an issue at Fenway, but it just got me thinking about sometimes even if it's not an exciting game, there's another way to think about it. The most recent game I shot ended up being a really slow game. You know, MLB's trying to get those games under 3 hours. This one went well over 4 hours.
And well, it went the Red into, Sox, I'm not surprised. Yeah,
we camp out there. I am good friends with the other photographers, I'll tell you that. And so it went into 10 innings. And Xander Bogaerts hit an RBI single for Mookie Betts to score. They win the game. And that's another thing about sports photography, is just paying attention to your teams and knowing kind of their rituals. So I know this season, more than the previous one at least, they started to do a lot more Powerade and Gatorade dumps. So we all know to look for that. So I know I see Xander come out and I'm like, oh, he's going to get wrecked. So paying attention to that, shooting, you know, the kind of the stuff afterwards. And, you know, often that is the story of the game. Again, if I'm calling my friend, I'm saying, oh man, hot summer day. You know, this crazy Powerade dump at the end. You know, and sometimes even though it's not an action image, that's the one, I mean, that's the one that got used the most from that game. So anyway, I hope that answers your question. I'm filing throughout the game, paying attention to not only the action, but kind of the story arc, and looking for kind of an interesting way to tell that story.
So I'm curious about a couple things that you mentioned. So the first thing you said was that you might change your lenses depending on which teams are playing. Can you talk a little bit more about that, like why that matters?
Sure. I think that, for example, if they're playing the Yankees, or I mean, it's for me, I always have the Red Sox, which always has, you know, Ortiz and, you know, Dustin Pedroia, and they've always got kind of some celebrity or really kind of high profile players. But, you know, if A-Rod's playing, I'm going to stick with a 400 millimeter lens or maybe put a converter on so I can shoot something really tight of his face. Because something that's also, you know, I think important with not only Webb, of course, which I'm lucky I've only ever really shot with Webb being present. But also, I think social media has changed the way that I work a lot. So, you know, a lot of times different platforms really want tight pictures of maybe just somebody's face. You know, really a lot of reaction stuff. I notice that's a lot, especially for NBA and NHL. You know, I'll file after the first period of a hockey game, and then before the game starts, I'll check my Instagram, and I'll see, okay, the Bruins, the pictures that they're sending are a really tight reaction shot of someone's face. So maybe I don't mean to make it sound so set in stone about changing it by the teams, but definitely knowing if there's some higher profile players, I try and get some isolated pictures of them that I think are used as time goes on too.
I never would have known that. Yeah. Like, you know, it makes a ton of sense. You're like, oh, here's a sports celebrity. We're living in the age of social media. Definitely. Like, maybe I should change it up.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I shot some pictures. The Cavs were in town during just the regular season. I shot some tight pictures of Iman Shumpert. You know, I filed them because I didn't think much of it. I kind of liked how his hair looked that day. And then, like, the next day, there's this crazy story of how he helped deliver his baby in a bathroom. And so, yeah, so, you know, time is running this story, and there's my picture. You know, that's the most recent picture of him, is that I shot during a Celtics game. So it's like you're saying, with sports celebrities, there's so much need for so much content. You know, if they're running this story about him delivering a baby or helping deliver a baby, they're not going to necessarily want a picture of him dribbling down the court. You know, they want something where he's kind of like a better picture of his face. You know, there's just so much need for content that, you know, I try and do my best to deliver that in some variety.
So this may be more a little bit off the cuff, but like, do you ever want one of your pictures to like become a meme or something, or has that ever happened?
I don't think that's ever happened. I mean, I wouldn't, Sure. You know, I think that's one of those things. I try and set my goals within things that I can really control. And I think that's really out of my hands to have a meme happen. But one of the photographers in Boston, his photo is the Jordan crying meme.
I was about to say, like, whoever shot that photo must just be, like, haunted.
I don't think I was reading an article. I don't think he even realized it was a meme. He's a bit of an older dude, and I don't think he was really plugged into the meme culture, you know,
but that's so funny.
But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the internet can just run with it and do with it what they will. So maybe one day you can keep an eye out for it.
That's wild. Yeah. All right. Well, you let me know if you become a meme or if one of your photos becomes a meme.
I will definitely be on the lookout for that. Yeah.
Okay. So kind of along this line of what are kind of big dramatic images that you're trying to capture. Mm-hmm. I read a couple other interviews that you've done to prep for our conversation today, and you said that you chose sports photography because you are, quote, drawn mostly to loud, dynamic images.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, from a visual perspective, what's the sport or the event or the player that you think makes the best subject?
Personally, I really like boxing, and I don't do a ton of it only because there's not a ton of it going on in Boston, but
yeah.
It's really a personal sports photograph. If you think about something like a Patriots game, which I love shooting, but everybody's in helmets, you know, there's a ton of people on the sidelines, a ton of people on the field, a ton of photographers. Yeah. It's just kind of messy, and I love it, but it's not personal in that way. Whereas with boxing, worse, you know, my elbows are sitting on the ring. And Al Bello, who's a fantastic photographer for Getty, who everybody should look up if they're not familiar with his work, I asked him before my first boxing match, I said, you know, do you have any advice for me? And he's a phenomenal boxing photographer. So he gave me some great advice about shooting, but he said, you're going to think I'm messing with you, but do not take that camera away from your face because their blood is going to get on your face.
You know, oh my God.
Yeah, that's how close you are. And I'm sure you've seen pictures of kind of, it looks like sweat coming off their face.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it is, but it's also like a Vaseline so that the punches don't break the skin as easily.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I'm shooting, I'm very much kind of in the zone, not really paying attention to the periphery of it. But there have been times I'm like, finally, I'm done filing. I walk to the bathroom to wash my hands and I've got just like goo on me.
Is nuts.
Yeah, exactly. So it's interesting. You can hear what the coaches are saying. They're right behind you. You know, you can see the expressions on their face. Often their family members are behind you. So for that, those I think are the most kind of in-your-face pictures often. And of course there's exceptions, but that's pretty reliably a very kind of intimate, loud experience, which is pretty cool.
I feel like you're getting the like 4D version of sports.
Yes, you really are, you know, and it's loud too. You know, I started wearing, and loud noises really don't bother me, but I started bringing earplugs because I noticed hours after it was done, my ears were still kind of ringing because you're really right there.
No, this is fascinating because, I mean, obviously photography is a visual medium, mm-hmm. but they're like you taking that picture, there are so many other sensory experiences that are going into how you're picking a shot, you know,
definitely.
How the game is going, how the mm-hmm. event is going. Man, I never even thought of that before. I'm learning so much already.
Exactly.
Okay, so I want to go back to talking about Boston a little bit.
Sure.
Because as you mentioned, great sports town,
definitely.
Crazy sports fans. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that there's always a lot to see.
Yes.
But we've also mentioned in your intro that you do travel quite a bit and cover kind of wide variety of stuff. So I'm wondering when you go to different places versus when you're kind of at your home base in Boston, mm-hmm. how does the feel of a place, the environment you're in, how does that influence what you're shooting?
You know, I'm inspired by different places in a few different ways. I mean, I think that with sports, you're not necessarily out in the community as much sometimes, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. for example, like when I was in Canada covering the Women's World Cup, I thought the Cambodian fans were amazing. You know, I'm in Canada, but I was reacting a lot to these fans who came a long way and have drums and face paint and all this crazy stuff. So the geographic location doesn't matter as much as you might think.
Huh.
Just because the diehard fans are the ones that are the most vocal, and often they're not necessarily from that place. I think that there are places, like, for example, I did Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals in Oklahoma City. Yeah. And I'd never been to Oklahoma. And I called some of my coworkers, like I mentioned before, you know, helping each other out. And I said, hey, do you have advice? Who should I talk to? Blah, 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 blah. And they said, first of all, bring your earplugs. I was like, well, you know, but like I shoot Celtics games all the time. Like, I, you know, it's fine. I've shot in front of the bands for March Madness. They're like, no. Yeah. This is next level. And I'm like, okay, fine. So I bring my earplugs, and it was insane in Oklahoma. Like, it is the loudest place I've ever been in my entire life. And so that definitely helped influence it. Because, I mean, obviously I was excited to be there, but I was like, oh, man, it'd already kind of been a long day. I flew in. And they really energized me. And I was like, oh, man, I am all about this Oklahoma City team. You know, like,
home court advantage is real.
It is so real. I felt so bad for Golden State because I was sitting next to their bench. And I was like, oh, man, you guys are toast. This is it. You know, you are out. But, you know, I was wrong. They turned it around. But yeah, I mean, I would say it doesn't affect it as much as necessarily if you're working on, like, a reporting piece about being in a different country. But, I mean, it's in the back of my mind for sure.
Yeah, I think that there are just so many narratives about how sports are so connected to a city and its community. But it's interesting that I mean, I guess it might be obvious, too, that that's more related to the fans and the people than it is kind of like the physical place.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. What have been some of your favorite places to shoot?
Definitely shooting the Women's World Cup final in Vancouver was really cool. Only because, and I totally, I mean, I get it. No complaints. I shoot mostly men's sports because that's, you know, the big thing. But it felt like a Patriots playoff game in that arena. And I'd never experienced something like that for women's sports, especially soccer, which is close to my heart because I grew up playing it.
Yeah.
So that was really, you know, I don't feel jaded at all. I think that it's more like when I'm at work, I'm really like, okay, I'm at work. I don't sit back thinking, wow, cool, because I got a job to do. But that was one of those days where I really kind of took it all in and thought, wow, this is really special and really exciting. I also think Fenway Park, you know, which I think breaks my dad's heart. He's a New Yorker. And I think, like, he's happy for me that I have a job. But, like, the fact that I work in Fenway Park is just,
oh, my God.
It's really tough for him. But Fenway Park is beautiful. Oh, my gosh, you know. And it's so iconic. And, I think he would kill me if he heard me say I'm a Red Sox fan now, so I don't want to go that far. But working in Fenway is really great, and I look forward to going every game.
Totally. I mean, yeah, Fenway Park is the first place I ever watched a baseball game, so I'm obviously very nostalgic for it. And I live in D.C. now, and so I've become a big Nats fan. And Nats Stadium is like a primo modern luxury stadium. Like, there's not a bad seat. It's clean. It's like spacious enough. But then, like, there is just something about Fenway. It's so historic. You're so close to the field. Like, that's what I don't think people who haven't been there, like, don't get, is that, like, you are so much closer to the players and to the diamond at Fenway than you are, like, almost anywhere else I've watched a baseball game.
Totally.
Love Fenway. I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah. Big fan.
I mean, like, sorry to your dad or whatever, but...
exactly. He can deal. It's fine.
Yeah, I also want to discuss kind of, like, what's the role of being a fan of sports in order to work in sports?
Sure.
Because I'd imagine that, you know, having a good understanding of a game or a sport or a team would be an advantage when you're covering storylines and trying to get sort of that stuff communicated. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know, you've mentioned you're not the only photographer somewhere at a game, whatever. And so, you know, maybe having a fresh perspective on something, maybe knowing a little bit less when everybody's watching the same thing might actually be an advantage. So, you know, how does being a fan kind of play to your benefit and maybe be a challenge at points?
Sure. I mean, I have to be honest, I was not really a sports fan until recently. I really enjoyed photographing it, but didn't know a ton about it. My last semester in college, I lived in a house with six guys. And so I quickly had to get on board the sports train because, like, SportsCenter was always on. And they're the guys who are talking about the sports memes. They're just so, just into it. And so I was like, all right, you know, maybe I should really start educating myself a little more. So through that, I started to really kind of follow it. And it's really important and really helpful if that's going to be your job. Another thing is I had always kind of moved around a little bit for photography, at least. You know, I'd be I was in Seattle for a summer or New York for the fall, and I didn't really have time to get in the rhythm and really get to know a team that well. Yeah. So with Boston, it's really, you know, it's important. That's part of my job to know what's going on. And so, and it's things like I kind of already mentioned, like little stuff like knowing, okay, if Gronk scores a touchdown, this is how he's going to celebrate.
Yeah.
Because if you're not prepared for that, then you're going to miss it. And that's something, that's a picture that we need, is Gronk spiking the football, making a funny face, you know, as much as we like to laugh about it, it's like, that's what we need, you know? So that's really important. And also, knowing, you know, who is the new draft pick for the Celtics, you know, that first game, because we need a ton of pictures of him, you know, knowing who's coming up from Pawtucket for the Red Sox, you know, who's playing well, who isn't. And I think that, especially doing some travel like I do, which I love, and I love that that's part of my job, but I'm not at every single Red Sox game. So being able to pull up, you know, the Globe, the Boston Herald, looking at ESPN, it's huge, because if you're kind of not paying attention for a week or two and then come back, it's you can miss something that people really need. So the fresh perspective is nice. I think that that comes in that I'm not bored of the stuff I do. I don't really get starstruck by most people, except for maybe Tom Brady. but I think that that's helpful, just in that I'm still – it's still really cool to me.
Yeah.
But I think that as much as I wish I could kind of wing it, it's not really the best way to go about it.
Well, it sort of sounds like you've gone the opposite way. Like being a sports photographer has made you a better fan.
Definitely.
Rather than being a fan has made you a better photographer.
Definitely. And I get into conversations with people sometimes at bars, or just out talking with friends, and people are like, wow, you know so much about sports. You must really follow it. And they think I'm just a casual fan. I'm like, oh man, you know, this is what I got to do. I got to know, you know,
yeah,
the trade deadline is and all that kind of stuff. But I'm if you don't know my job, it seems very impressive.
Well, I think that we're showing it is impressive. I wouldn't undersell yourself.
Oh, fair enough.
So I also want to talk about the maybe kind of competition, to use a bad metaphor, of sports photography.
Yeah.
You know, you've mentioned that a lot of the people you work with are very supportive and helpful.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I wonder if there is kind of a competitive edge because somebody's picture is the one that gets picked up.
Totally.
So how much of what you'd say you do is more of a solo pursuit, and how much are you relying on other people?
So I would say like 75 or 80% of the stuff that I do is by myself. With the exception of bigger playoff games, hockey, basketball, and baseball is a one-man show. I'm just by myself for that. Football, I'm normally with at least two other people, another photographer and an editor. And then something like the Kentucky Derby is, you know, six people at least, or the U.S. Open, we've got like 12 or 15 people. So I would definitely say within Getty, it's very supportive versus competitive, you know? I mean, there's definitely instances where I'm like, oh man, that's a great frame. I wish I shot that, but I don't wish ill will upon the person, of course. I'm like, oh man, like, good for you. That's great. Whatever. The other thing is too, is it's subjective photography. I mean, there are some things where it's like, hey, you missed this play and you got this play, this touchdown, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that is what it is. But there's some stuff where it's like, oh, hey, they used your celebration shot instead of mine. Okay, you know, that's up to that editor, and I can't let it keep me up at night, otherwise I would never sleep, you know? It is what it is. But I think the biggest thing I've had to realize is having some trust in myself that, you know, I'm doing the best I can, and with photography, you either got it or you don't. And there's no going back and redoing it. It's, you got it right or you didn't, and, you know, can't worry about it too much.
You know, that almost sounds like such a similar mentality that athletes have to have, of like, the play's over, you got to move on, next thing.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's something I think I didn't realize it until, you know, more recently with getting my job, but that's the mentality I think I was taught playing sports growing up, is, okay, we lost this game, but you got to get over it, because what are you going to do, quit? You're going to lose your whole – you're going to quit this whole season? You don't know.
Smash your camera.
And that's what I think is great about – you know, being as busy as I am, I love it. It's like, all right, so maybe yesterday's game didn't go so well, but I've got one tomorrow, and, you know, let's keep working.
Such a healthy attitude.
I can't be a basket case. You know, I've got to kind of have a good attitude. I do the best I can to have a good one.
Like neuroses are a luxury.
Exactly. I don't have time for that.
Has there ever been a shot that you took where you were like, wow, this is so it. I really nailed it. And then, like, for whatever reason, it doesn't get run. Like, there's breaking news or something, so nobody cares. Or, like, somebody else gets a different shot that makes your shot. Like, have you ever just been like, that should have been my shot?
Yes. I wish I could tell you I don't care, but this totally happened to me, like, last month. There was this I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me, so I don't remember all the details. But it was, I think it was a 10 or 11 inning game for the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And Ortiz, I think it was an RBI double. So I was shooting. I took a little bit of a risk because it was a day game. This is kind of talking about different lenses for different light situations. So I was shooting up kind of near the suite level above home plate at Fenway.
Yeah.
And the whole team kind of swarmed around David Ortiz, and I was shooting tight on Ortiz, who's kind of in the center as everybody was running in. And I was like, oh, man, this is so cool. You know, this is nice. It's like he's so excited. People were throwing water bottles at him. It was really great. So then I go and I file it, and then later that night I look, I'm like, oh man, you know, I bet it's got picked up somewhere, and I didn't see it anywhere. And I was just but you know, it's one of those things where I was like, you know, they didn't use mine, but they used some of my friend's stuff, and I was like, hey, you know, it is what it is, it's fine. I was still happy with it, that's what matters.
I feel like every once in a while I would just get driven like so crazy by just like, I had it and you didn't use it. Yeah. Like, why don't you see?
No, that's the thing that's one of the gives and takes about working for a wire versus a newspaper, you know? And I had some, for example, I interned at the Washington Post, which was my hometown paper. So exciting. It was great. And I knew the sport editor and some of the designers, and that's a place where you can kind of really have a discussion about how your photos are used and what they're looking for and have a lot of feedback. But working for a wire, it just kind of goes out into the internet and it's out of my hands, and if somebody uses
a little
it,
more great. Random
and that's why I can't get too hung up on it, because you know, I don't know what they're looking for. Like,
just got to keep doing the best you can do.
Exactly.
When I was thinking about, you know, questions to ask, and I was trying to put myself in the place of like, okay, if I were a sports photographer, like what would be the coolest part of it?
Right.
The first thing that came to me is obviously the up close access that you're granted.
Totally.
Like that just seems like you can't even buy that ticket, you know?
Right.
But then you've said in other interviews that your favorite photo that you've taken is one that you took from the crowd of a bullfight that you attended when you had a day off in Seville.
Yeah.
So what do you think are the most exciting aspects of those two very different vantage points?
Totally. Well, I think that one thing to keep in mind that I like to tell people, because, you know, a lot of times people say, oh, man, you have the coolest job. And, you know, I agree. I love my job. I think it's great. But I think that sometimes people don't realize, you know, first of all, I'm lugging around 40 or 50 pounds worth of gear. And when you're drinking your Bud Lights on your couch eating chicken wings watching the snowy Patriots game, I am out there
losing
my ass off, which again, totally fine, love my job, it's great, but it's not like a walk in the park necessarily. So I mean, I think it's really cool to be up close and personal for that stuff, but I think also, you know, you don't need to be at the Super Bowl to take a good football picture, you know. You don't need to be at the Olympics to shoot a good gymnastics picture, and I think that's something people get hung up on. And I think one of the reasons I like that bullfighting picture is almost more for the sentiment than the picture itself. Just that I was a student and I was studying abroad, and I thought, oh man, how cool would it be to go to a bullfight? And I had my camera with me, and I had the cheapest seat in the house. And I was like, oh man, that's really pretty, and shot it. And I mean, it's beautiful, you know, it's great just because of how it's framed and that kind of thing. I don't mean to be like talking myself up. It's more just like, that happened on accident, you know.
And
you don't need to be right up in somebody's face with the most expensive camera gear and the biggest lens to take an interesting picture.
I mean, it's a beautiful shot. My favorite part of it is the colors, like the whatever it was, like the sand or the dirt or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like this really orangey, yellowy kind of. I'll post the picture on our along with this episode so that people can see, but. Yeah, I mean, definitely kind of off the beaten path for you.
Mm-hmm, totally. And I think that's nice to kind of refresh yourself sometimes. I mean, as I keep saying, my job's great, but it can get to be kind of a grind with, okay, you know, all I have this month is regular season Red Sox games, which is when they're doing well, exciting, but yeah. For example, last year they weren't doing so well and the games were kind of a drag and no one's really excited to be there. And so I think it's fun. Like some of my favorite assignments are, you know, when I was up at the Women's World Cup, I shot a rodeo on one of my off days just because I thought, hey, I'm not doing anything else. And I was frankly tired of hearing no from people trying to get better access or go different places. And I was feeling kind of beat down. And I thought, you know what? I got to go find something where I can kind of do whatever I want. So I went to this rodeo out in the middle of nowhere, you know, and it's great. You know, I was climbing up on one of the fences where they set up the bulls with the rider.
Yeah.
I was climbing up there and this guy goes, excuse me, ma'am. And I was just ready for him to say, get the hell out of here. What are you doing? And I looked up and I was like, yes. And he said, I just want to give you a heads up. This bull is going to kick back and he might hit you right in the face. I don't care, but I'd be careful if I were you. And I was like, you know, cool. I got it. Thanks, man. Thanks for the heads up. You know?
Yeah.
And so I think that those assignments are like a refresh button for me a little bit. Because that's another thing I think people might not realize is there's a lot of regulation within a lot of the pro sports. And so shooting college level or high school level or your neighborhood, whatever the hell you got going on, often can make for better pictures. So, yeah.
Well, I feel like a bull is your spirit animal or something.
That is my zodiac sign as well. What can I say?
Is it really? That's awesome. <Yeah. laughs> So we kind of touched upon how you feel like social media is kind of changing sports photography and what gets picked up and that sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure.
So kind of along those lines, what are you seeing as the next big trends in sports photography? Or like, what's a photo or technique that, you know, you learned that you were like, wow, like this is groundbreaking for me and this is going to really like change what I do.
Right. I mean, I think I don't have a ton of experience with it, but two things. One are 360 cameras. At Getty, at least, all have little 360 cameras that, for example, they're just really easy to carry around and shoot. I think that at least the ones we have, the small ones, aren't as fast as you might want to use to capture game action. But to show, you know, for example, okay, this is what the finish line of the Boston Marathon looks like. Or I used it at the World Figure Skating Championships. So that's something that I know we're all going to be using a lot in Rio. Another one, which again, I haven't used a lot, but I know my coworkers are using a ton. Even right now at diving championships that are going on, qualifiers for Rio, are the underwater robotics cameras and just robotic cameras in general. There's been a big jump in technology from even just the London Olympics, where instead of just setting up a camera, you know, figuring out the exposure and letting it go, now we can really control them a lot underwater or up on a ceiling and move with the action as opposed to waiting for the action to come to the camera. So, there's a lot of, I think you'll be seeing a lot of pictures from different angles and different kind of types of pictures, I think, coming out of this Olympics than we did of the previous ones.
Okay, so I want to switch gears a little bit because, you know, part of the show is to discuss sports from a women's perspective, from a gender perspective. And I sometimes hesitate to ask this question because on the one hand, I think that talking about, you know, women working in sports is important. But on the other hand, I sometimes wonder if keeping the focus on a woman who works in sports rather than just a person who works in sports, you know, there's some debate about how constructive that is.
Yeah.
I do want to kind of ask you the question since I've asked so many other guests the questions, but what has your experience been working in sports photography as a woman, especially because photography, you're kind of an observer to other people and other dynamics going on.
I think the big thing that I think it's important to talk about, just because I think there should be more women in sports, is I think sports isn't necessarily a really welcoming environment for women to start in. I think, especially if you are just kind of starting out and don't necessarily have a good mentor to help you out, just because it can be pretty intimidating. I think that most of the people, many of the people working for the teams are men. Many of the people in the media are men, and it's still just, it's a boys club, which I'm not saying is a good or bad thing, but it's just, no one's going to come up to you and say, oh, hey, what's your name? Let me help you, necessarily. Yeah. So I think that there should be a push to kind of make sports a little more accessible for people just starting out, especially women, because I've heard and seen girls say, oh, I shot a baseball game at my internship, and, you know, it sucked. I mean, people weren't nice. I got heckled by fans. I was harassed by the people sitting in the row behind me. And it breaks my heart to hear that, because I think that if it were a more welcoming environment, more women would be involved.
Yeah.
But for me personally, I feel really lucky tossing back to my mentor, Doug, and more mentors I've had since. I shadowed him in political photography at first, which is, again, kind of overwhelmingly men. And he sat down and introduced me to everybody, who was so nice, so helpful, just fantastic people. So luckily, I rolling up to whatever city, I'm not thrown by seeing that or intimidated by it. And at Getty, I feel really lucky because when I was an intern, Elsa Garrison, she's a staffer for us in New York, and she was there, and she's always been so great. And not to say that the men weren't great to me either, but I think it's nice to have another woman to look to sometimes. You know, I think it's important to have a range of mentors, and having more women involved to reach for other young women to look up to, I think, is really important.
Yeah, I had a follow-up question to, you know, you say that if there were more women involved, it might seem easier, less intimidating to women who want to break into it.
Yeah.
Are you seeing examples where there's a strategy, however formal or informal, where you're seeing that happen?
I'll just speak for myself. I'm sure it's happening other places.
Yeah.
I think that even just starting in college, I really tried to pull some of the underclassmen girls to shoot sports, or even it's been great, you know, with, like you mentioned, doing some previous interviews. The reason why I continue to say yes and to do them is because I get emails and Facebook messages from girls in high school and college saying, hey, I only ever see men on the sidelines. I didn't know you were doing this. How cool. And I say, sick, let's go get coffee. Let's sit down. Let me look at your work. Let's talk about it. You know, I know some of my friends who do the same. If they see somebody who looks a little lost, they say, come on over. Let me help you out.
So,
You know, and there are some organizations like WPOW, with Women Photojournalists of Washington, which is great.
Oh, cool.
I know that NPPA, which is the National Press Photographers Association, if you look into it, there's more stuff coming around, which is really encouraging. And
Yeah, definitely like a combination of kind of one-on-one, organic, kind of natural stuff, and then more systematic, like, let's address this as an issue kind of thing.
Totally, and I mean, it's something that's tough, because I think I don't want to generalize women as a whole by any means, because women love sports, but I would say more men love sports, you know, to the point where they would want to make a career out of following it. Because, you know, I went to photojournalism school, and the majority of the people in my photography classes were women. But the majority of them went into documentary photography, you know, and that was just their interest. You know, and again, I by no means want to be saying women don't like sports, because that is not true. They love it. But I think that within photography, I've seen more women go into documentary style work. So
interesting.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting because, I mean, you think of like women being interested in other people and emotional intelligence and like narratives and that sort of thing.
Yes.
And like all of those things exist in sports.
Yes.
But I think that what you were talking about, where just like the optics of sports being so male dominated.
Yes.
As I don't know, like putting up a first barrier, however imagined or not imagined that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Interesting.
Too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm definitely encouraged that you see people, because like you're even relatively young.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's nice to see that even people like yourself and other friends that you have are already kind of incorporating having a mentorship attitude to people who are even just a few years behind you.
Oh, definitely. And I think that what's cool is, you know, often I'll get questions or emails, and I'll say, I'm not the best person to talk to. You know, I'm still young in my career. Or, hey, you're in LA. You know, I'm in Boston, but let me point you in the right direction of some photographers that I know who are great people who can help you out, you know? And I think that that's something that I can offer, which might not necessarily be experience, but I do have a lot of knowledge of different people who do have a lot of good experience, you know?
Yeah, totally.
You know, I can point you in the right direction of somebody who really knows their stuff and they can help you out.
Ties make the world go round.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the thing is, too, is like many other areas of journalism and photography, a lot of my day is waiting around places, you know? We're getting there super early. And so, you know, it's great to hang with the dudes, but it's also really nice to, you know, kind of girl talk with somebody as well and hang out with other women and catch up and, you know, I feel bad. I don't want to sound like I'm throwing generalizations out there, but you know what I mean? It's just nice to be with a variety of people. And so
totally.
I encourage it and really look forward to the assignments where I work with some of the other women in Boston in particular.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I kind of opened this question by saying that I kind of hesitate to ask this question. Yeah. But you know, it seems like you are like willing and enthusiastic to address women in sports, women in sports photography, rather than feeling like that kind of diminishes your status or your accomplishments as like a photographer first.
Right. I mean, I think it's touchy for sure. But I mean, the way I see it though too is like the reason I love working at Getty at the company I'm at is because I don't think my boss sees me any differently. I don't think my coworkers see me any differently. They give me, I mean, I've been on staff for a year and a half and had some really kick-ass assignments. You know, it's great. Yeah. And my coworkers are super helpful and wonderful. And so I know that I'm not walking to work and they say, oh, there's the female photographer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that within work, I don't want to address it in that way because I know I'm not seen differently or as a handicap of some sort because I'm a woman. But I think it's worth addressing, hey, when I look around the sidelines, I wish there were some more women here. And I think that I think that the only way to change that is kind of talk about it and get more women interested and involved and hired and working because the numbers keep going up. You know, I mean, one of my mentors from school, her name's Marcy Nyswander, and she worked for AP out of Washington but also worked in Ohio for a bit. And you know, she had some horror stories where being the one of the only females working a Browns game was pretty awful. And, you know, I don't have that experience. Shooting a Pats game, everybody's great to me. Everybody's super nice. And so.
Yeah. It's like being now like the second, third, fourth generation of women working in these industries, you're kind of feeling the benefits a little bit.
Totally. And I don't by any means or stretch feel like I'm breaking new ground at all. You know, and that's the thing. It's like, I'm no trailblazer by any means. There's so many women who have come before me who are wonderful and talented and fantastic. Yeah. And so I think that, you know, I'm not breaking new ground, but I think it's worth saying, all right, cool. So like women are here. That's that's not news. You know, who cares? Yeah. Fantastic. But all right, how can we up these numbers a little bit? And I think that's a conversation worth having.
Right. Like success in this regard is that it's not notable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Okay. Well, I don't want to keep you too much longer. So I just have a few more questions.
Yeah, of course.
And kind of switching gears, maybe a little more lighthearted.
Sure.
What is a photo from sports history that you wish you could have taken?
Ooh. I don't know, maybe wish I would have taken, but one that I learned a lot from is actually not that far in the past. It was when I was interning for Getty. It was Mariano Rivera's last day. It was Mariano Rivera Day at Yankee Stadium. And I shot it with Elsa, who's the female photographer I was working with at Getty. And it was two of us. And she was pool that day, which means she was one of the two photographers allowed to do kind of a special angle. And she followed Mariano out from the bullpen as he walked towards the pitching mound. And she shot this beautiful photo. It's wide angle as he's kind of waving to the crowd as he's announced. And it was just beautiful. And the thing that I think is so interesting is I remember when she went out to do that, I remember thinking, like, man, I have no idea how I would shoot that. Like, I'm just a stupid intern. I have no idea. I'm just shooting the game like I normally would. But she came back with this beautiful picture. It was A1 of the New York Times the next day.
Wow.
And, you know, I wouldn't take it from her. That's why I don't wish I shot it because I'm glad she's got it. But I'm happy to look at that picture and think, like, first of all, like, I think I learned a lot from seeing how she shot it, and also hoping if I were in that situation now, I would know how to handle it versus when I was an intern, just kind of dumbstruck by, like, huh, that looks cool.
Yeah. Something to aspire to.
Yeah, totally. But look it up. It's a beautiful picture.
Cool. Yeah. We'll definitely have to post that one as well. All right. Well, a question that I like to close on, and also I just like to hear people's answers a bunch.
Sure.
What's something that you know now that you would tell your younger self about working in sports photography?
Ooh. I mean, I think I touched on this earlier, but I think I would definitely say just kind of like breathe a little bit. Like it's okay. And I think I used to get really wound up if I missed something, you know, if I didn't have the picture I thought I needed, or just really stressing out. And don't get me wrong, you know, I mean, I need to be on the ball, but I think it's important to kind of be a little zen about it, you know, and have confidence in yourself. I think that's one thing that I've had to work on since I've gotten this job is, you know, have confidence in myself that I'm going to do the best I can, and that's the best you can do, you know?
Yeah.
Like, have a little trust in yourself and trust in where you're standing, where you're positioned, what gear you got, and just shoot in the best way that you know how, because if, like you said, if you miss that touchdown in the first quarter and you let it bother you through to the fourth quarter, like, that's not going to work for you very well.
Yeah. Half the battle is mental.
Oh my gosh, so much of the battle is mental, definitely.
All right. Well, Maddie, thank you so much for joining the show. I really have learned so, so much this conversation, and I'm sure the listeners have as well.
Great.
And as I say to all of my guests, good game, Maddie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It was so much fun.
This week, thanks again to Maddie for joining the show. Be sure to like us on Facebook, that's Not Your Boyfriend's Sports Show, follow us on Twitter at NYBFSports, or shoot an email to nybfsports@gmail.com. And please visit the website, nybfsports.com, where you can sign up for the newsletter. New episodes straight to your inbox, plus sports stories curated by yours truly every other week. Thank you for tuning in, and as always, good game, listeners.